This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Britain's vote to exit from the European Union has shocked the world. The 52-48% vote now means that for the first time since its formation, the EU is losing a state. Nations like Greece and Spain have in the past flirted with the idea of leaving the EU. But the fact that a nation as important to financial markets as Britain has made such a decision has left people around the world jittery over what comes next. My guest is Sameer Dosani. He's an independent activist and freelance journalist and a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back to the show, Sameer.
Thanks, Sonali. Always a pleasure.
So how do you explain what happened? It seems as though the British people themselves were a little shocked at the outcome. And I don't think, you know, most people around the world or internationally really expected this to happen. It was close going in, but now it's a reality.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you look at the places where the no vote or the leave vote was strongest, it's really the places that were the hardest hit by deindustrialization and austerity going back to the time of Margaret Thatcher. So you basically have a protest vote and people who've been promised all kinds of things, jobs, better services, and so on for the last couple of decades or more and haven't seen them. So the way that I explain this is that it's a massive protest vote against the status quo, basically. Unfortunately, it's a protest vote that has empowered a very xenophobic, a very quasi-racist right wing within Britain.
And then David Cameron announcing his resignation. I mean, it's kind of ironic now, but a lot of left-leaning activists in the UK are almost sad to see him go.
It is really, really strange. I mean, this the whole thing about this particular vote, this referendum, is that it had very little to do with the left. I mean, I have some friends on the left in Britain who were sympathetic to the Leave vote. I think they were mistaken. But, you know, in order to understand this, you have to understand that it's a fight between two people who went to the same school, literally, who went to the same high school and didn't like each other, basically.
Really?
And have been fighting on and off ever since, right? They both went to Eton, Boris Johnson and David Cameron and so on. And listening to the interviews today with Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage and others, the people who were on the Leave side, they sound a little bit confused, which is not a good sign. They were not. You get the feeling that they were expecting this, you know, less than. I mean, I frankly have been expecting this for the last couple of weeks, certainly, because the polls have been very close, you know, just the fact that this was not a left-right debate. It was really a pro or anti status quo debate.
And just by the way, to back up and let our audience know, Boris Johnson's former mayor of London, some are saying that he could actually replace Cameron as the next PM.
I think that's been his desire since he first ran for mayor of London. So I think that anyone who's following him, you know, thinks that he has had that ambition. Mm-hmm. I think that you know, I think he probably won. You know, and now I'm just guessing. This is pure speculation based on secondhand reports and so on. But I suspect he would have preferred to sort of lose this closely and then kind of ease his way into the prime ministership over the next couple of years. But now it's looking likely, and I believe he's made a statement to the effect that he's hoping to be prime minister by October.
It's just really amazing because I think you're right. A lot of people were kind of expecting this vote to sort of narrowly lose. They would have made their point that they're interested and really want to leave the EU, kind of save face on, you know, this Britain first mentality, but then continue and keep enjoying the benefits of being in the EU. What is the downside? There is massive sort of financial repercussions expected. Many are predicting a huge recession from this, global recession, where, you know, Asian markets are super jittery. People in China and Japan were watching stocks worried, hoping that Britain would remain in the EU.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we got to take all that market stuff with a little bit of salt, because at the end of the day, if you look at in pure policy terms, this doesn't actually change much. You know, Britain is still next to Europe, even if it's not technically part of the European Union. Hmm. It's still going to have to trade with Europe. As a result, it's going to have to abide by those rules. So I think that some of that, you know, it's probably going to blow over soon. That said, if it doesn't blow over, there are all kinds of shock, potential shocks in the system, because you have to remember we're living in a world that has still not dealt with the repercussions of setting up a huge house of cards in 2008. So what Yanis Varoufakis, the former finance minister of Greece, he calls the bankruptocracy. I like that term. So we're still living in that world. And so, you know, if this continues beyond, you know, in the next couple of days or the next couple of working days, it'll be because something else comes up, because you know, the Chinese housing market, for example, is very inflated, or you know, Portuguese debt, you know, is insane. So there's many other potential disasters just below the surface that could come up, and this could be one impetus for those to come up.
Right. So we are still, of course, living in the post-recession, post-bailout era. What about impacts to the United States? Obama, like many world leaders, was hoping for Britain to remain in the EU. He is now saying that both him and Vice President Joe Biden made statements saying that the US-UK, quote, special relationship would remain untouched as a result of this vote. Does this have any impact on here in the US?
Listen, I mean, let's not overstate the significance. Britain is a tiny island, you know, off the coast of Europe, that, you know, used to control a big section of the world and now is more or less irrelevant. I mean, it's the special relationship is basically that it functions as a particularly, you know, useful missile silo for the United States. You know, that's pretty much it in terms of foreign policy. So, and I think, you know, the Brits, especially in the days of Tony Blair, they really sort of overstated that. I mean, you know, the U.S. has other potential missile silos it could use. It's just that Tony Blair was very good at doing public relations for the Iraq War and so on. What it does do is, in terms of financial markets, is it's already has propped up the U.S. dollar, which is a currency that is already overinflated. What I mean, overvalued, sorry, not overinflated, which makes it difficult to, you know, it will lower inflation, will move closer to deflation in the U.S., and it makes it difficult to do the kind of investing that's needed within the U.S. It's difficult to, because you see what I'm saying, because the
Right.
U.S. dollar is becoming more valuable relative to other currencies. More money's coming in. Already we have too much money, so interest rates will go lower, and people will, you know, it's the kind of pressures that have led us to the kind of near stagflation scenario that we've had for the last decade. Those pressures can get higher unless the currencies return to where they were, you know, yesterday, the day before. So in just in the short term, just in today, we've already seen that this has created some problems for the US potentially.
Now, what about how it might impact other countries? You mentioned Yanis Varoufakis, and he had a hope for a Greek exit from the EU as leverage to undermine the EU's and the ECB and the IMF's austerity program. Spain has also very much sort of considered openly leaving the EU. Could the Brexit inspire Grexit or Spain's exit or other nations? Kind of interested in the idea of exiting the EU. Could this be the beginning of the end of the EU?
I think when we talk about the beginning of the end of the EU, I think we have to actually talk about last summer. I think we have to talk about that incident in Greece, and we have to talk about the fact that, you know, there was absolutely no respect, not even pretending to respect democracy in Greece. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, the EU leaders have largely
And
done
you're
this to
referring to the
themselves.
fact that the Greeks held a referendum over austerity and then voted overwhelmingly against austerity.
That's right, but still Syriza was made to accept. You know, what it's not just austerity, Sonali. I think we have to understand that they voted against taking an additional loan that they knew they couldn't
Right.
repay, right? So they in some ways it was a very, you know, Thatcherite or very Reaganite move. We're not going to take debt that we can't repay under any circumstances. But they were forced to take the debt. That debt has not been repaid, cannot be repaid. The debt is being restructured, you know, day by day or every couple of weeks, there's this, or every couple of months, there's some renegotiation of that. So it's an ongoing crisis. And you're quite right to say that, you know, where will the next fissure be? And I think that that's really scaring people in Brussels and Berlin tonight. And I think that they're really thinking about how they can frankly punish. I mean, there's no respect for democracy in Brussels. So I think their first thought is, how do we punish the British people, if it's at all possible, for voting to leave? And secondly, how do we punish others? And I don't think they care so much about Greece and Portugal, to tell you the truth, Sonali. I think they care about France and maybe Italy. I think it's the big economies that they want under their thumb.
Which is a really important point, because really the critique of the EU has been that powerful countries within the EU have been able to step on less powerful countries, poorer countries. Britain was one of the powerful ones.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. I think you have to also understand, Sonali, that it's not just about countries. You know, it's not Germany oppressing Greece. It's a crisis that takes different forms in different countries. It is affecting, you know, if you're a working person in Greece or a retired person in Greece, in Germany, you're watching your pension funds disappear through deflation, through the fact that there are negative interest rates and so on. So you're nervous about that. You would rightfully be nervous about that. Of course, that's not comparable to the kind of Great Depression that Greece is going through, or massive recessions that countries like Spain and Portugal are going through. So I don't want to compare. I don't want to say that the pain is equal, but the pain is everywhere. It's if you want to understand the pain, it's more about a class-based pain than about a nation-based pain. So certainly, I mean, of course, Germany is not going to leave, but certainly, if you look at what's going on right now in France with the strikes and the violence and so on. If you look at the discussion, Marine Le Pen in France, who's the far right party, has already made said that we need this kind of referendum in France, and others will say similar things in the days ahead. So I know that Brussels will be thinking about how to do this, how to stop the rot, as it were. But I don't know if they have enough respect for democracy to understand that actually they need to reform their own policies and their own thinking, and especially their own economic policies, in order for this to really stop.
I'm loath to spend any time on Donald Trump, but given that he is a presidential contender, unfortunately, I'm left with little choice. We mentioned what Obama's response was to Brexit. Donald Trump said it is, quote, a great thing. He said, I see a big parallel. People want to take their country back. And people took their country back just like we will take America back. And he is... What's really interesting, Sameer, is that he made a very convoluted argument as well for why Brexit is actually going to be good for the economy. But first and foremost, he is a businessman, not necessarily a good one, but he is a businessman interested first and foremost in his businesses, but also trying to whip up this nationalist frenzy and seeing the Brexit vote as a nationalist vote, which it is to an extent. What do you make of his celebration of Brexit, particularly given that, I don't know, he may and his industries may lose money over the financial turmoil?
Yeah, I think, I think Donald Trump, from his perspective, is right to celebrate Brexit, but I don't think he himself understands why.
Yeah.
My understanding is that, you know, this is the latest in a year of 2016 has been a crazy year, hasn't it?
I mean, it certainly has.
And I think it's just a year showing that the status quo is dead. It's a year showing that the politics that you and I grew up with in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, these politics are dead. The center, the neoliberal status quo, the post-Cold War consensus is completely dead. And unfortunately, the center is more afraid of people like you and me than they are of people like Donald Trump and Boris Johnson. So they have engineered politics in such a way, they've engineered the discussion in such a way that either it's, they are sort of representing the left. David Cameron in this discussion, bizarrely, was representing the left, right, in that discussion. So when he lost, it was somehow a failure of everyone to the left of David Cameron, which is like you know, 80% of British politics.
I mean, Samir, what you're saying is exactly what can be applied to the US presidential race. Everyone to the left of Hillary now wins if Hillary Clinton beats Donald Trump. And if she loses, then it's a loss for everyone to the left of Hillary Clinton.
This is the fear. So the fear is that the center, and you saw this with the sort of undermining of Bernie in lots of ways. The center feared Bernie more than they feared Trump, which is insane for me because actually Bernie would have, you know, I respect Bernie, I like the movements and so on, but he was not a revolutionary. He was arguing for something that he is arguing for something. Sorry, I shouldn't refer in the past tense. He's arguing for a return to sort of 1950s, 1960s U.S. capitalism, you know, where he's arguing for a return of, you know, Eisenhower/Nixon economic policies, right? Perfectly consistent with that. So it wouldn't have been a real threat, but Trump is a real threat. And no one knows exactly how, because no one knows exactly what he believes, or what he would implement if he got into power. And that's the situation that we might find ourselves in if we have a sort of UKIP-influenced, Tory party taking control in Britain. No one's exactly sure. Now, the thing is that, you know, Boris Johnson is not Donald Trump. Boris Johnson, as I said, comes from exactly the same political school as David Cameron.
Although he looks a little like him, I should say.
He does look a little like him. He has some crazy hair going on. But he is an insider. He is an intellectual, in fact, although he doesn't sound like it, in a way that Donald Trump certainly isn't.
Right.
So you can't really compare in that sense. But the people behind him, the worry more than these individuals, the worry more than Trump or more than Johnson, is the individuals who are backing them have some pretty high expectations. They want their jobs back. They want the country as it was, whether it's the US or Britain. They want it as it was 20 or 30 years ago. And that's not happening. That's not going to happen. These are the people who are arguing for cuts in the National Health Service in Britain. These are the people who are arguing for lower taxes for the rich, right? So they're not going to be able to deliver on their promises. And the fear is that when they don't deliver on that, what is this, you know, racist fringe that is backing them? Let's say 50% of the British population backed this. Let's say only 10% of that 50. So only 5% of the population actually has that UKIP racist mentality. But they've been empowered. They've been emboldened. I've heard stories today of people going to schools, you know, that are frequented by immigrants and holding signs like, you know, go back to your country or something like this. And I've heard stories of children being told by classmates, you know, now that you've lost the referendum, you have to go home or something like this, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the people who've been empowered. And what happens now, they feel emboldened. What happens when they feel like they have power, but they're also under threat? They feel like they haven't got what they wanted. It's potential. There's a lot of potential for violence here in this discussion. Mm-hmm.
Finally, Samir, just putting Brexit into a historical context, which I think is really interesting, what are your thoughts on the fact that a huge part of this campaign to leave the EU was based on fear of people coming from many of the same countries that Britain has historically colonized? I think that history and that historical context, that imperial historical context, is crucial here. And you know, I don't think most Britons who voted for Brexit really faced that.
No, I think it's beyond that. I mean, I think it's, it's an interesting discussion, this one, because of course people who were colonized by Britain have in some ways been recolonizing the country, if you know anything about the history of British migration, since the 1960s, 1970s, right? So my own family came as some cousins of mine or some uncles and aunties came after the 1971 Bangladesh War. As refugees from war-torn Bangladesh, along with hundreds of others. Prior to that, there were lots of people who came from the West Indies, from Jamaica, and so on. And in fact, these were big enough populations to really leave a cultural mark. I mean, if you followed sort of British punk rock in the 1970s and 80s, or even sort of mainstream bands like The Police, these were bands that were influenced by sort of ska music, Jamaican ska music. So the history of migration from those places is not new. What's new is sort of the numbers. It's the numbers are increasing a little bit, But it's also happening. So the problem is there's a legitimate complaint of the British working class, which is that the quality and access to services is going down. And that is correlated with a rise in migration not from the places that I mentioned, from countries like Syria, from countries like Libya, from countries that have experienced U.S. and NATO aggression much more recently than Bangladesh or Jamaica or others, right? So it's a new wave of migration, and it's correlated, or it's not correlated. It's happened at the same time as there's been an attack on the National Health Service, as there's been an attack on public spending, as you have a Tory government that is extremely pro-privatization and so on. So the problem is really these austerity measures. The problem is that there's no jobs.
So people are linking these two issues and showing that there is a correlation between austerity and the influx of refugees.
Yeah. That's correct. I mean, basically, it's a failure of the status quo. The status quo on both the left and the right, so your Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, and David Cameron, have not been able to address the underlying problem in the system, which is that when there's a banking crisis, you can find £500 billion to give to the banks to bail them out. But when there's an everyday crisis of the National Health Service, when there's an everyday crisis of jobs, when people have stagnant wages and have had stagnant wages for decades, you can't do anything about that. So this is a failure of the center. And either the left or the right will be coming in the near future. You can pretty much bank on it. It looks like in the case of Britain, we're going to have the right. In the case of the U.S., who can say?
Who can say, indeed. I want to thank you so much, Samir, for joining us and for sharing your insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Samir Dosani is an independent activist and freelance journalist. We've been talking about Brexit, Britain's exit from the European Union. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.